Scratching the surface, City Kitty.
This week, I'm talking to graffiti artist Mike171. Mike's one of the originators of graffiti culture, starting back in 1968. I wanted to talk to Mike about what got him started writing on walls, and how he feels about the culture and how it's grown and changed over the past 55 years. But what I got was so much more. I got to learn about Mike's life and the community that he's still a part of that he helped grow. But we did get into some heavy topics, so I want to warn people out there, we do talk about sexual assault and violence and some things that could be potentially triggering to listeners, so be advised. So what year did you start writing graffiti?
Yeah, first of all, I'm Mike171. I'm born and raised in Washington Heights, and I started in the summer of 1968.
Damn. Yeah, it's one of those things that when I interviewed Al Diaz a couple weeks ago, I grew up looking up to 80s writers. I didn't really know about things that were happening that early. I knew the only person I knew about was Cornbread. And that's because a teacher of mine back in the day who was from Philly was like, yeah, there's this guy Cornbread. When I was growing up, he was always writing the Cornbread. He's like, I just see it everywhere. But I didn't realize, I mean, you were before that then.
He's saying he's before us. So, he started in 67, so he was in the truant house, whatever, the youth house. So he went in there in 65.
Okay.
So he claiming now from 67 that he started in 65 because he was institutionalized at a young age. So I give him the benefit of doubt because that's in history, it's on record. But he didn't get up and out into the public till 67.
Oh,
I see. Because he got out. But he destroyed the whole place inside. He's saying on the roof, this and that, the walls, bathrooms. We all did that in school.
Sure.
And the only reason we're talking about the New York City graffiti culture history movement, that's what we feel that we started.
Yeah, fair enough.
So there was Julio 204 out there that put a name with a street number.
Right.
He wasn't the first, but he was the first to get up around there because my brother and these guys and my cousins, these other guys were coming over from Northern Ireland and they were putting England Get Out of Ireland. They're drawing a soldier getting in a boot, getting kicked across the water.
Yeah.
So this is graffiti. That's art. This is what they were doing because that's what they were writing that shit in the battlefields
right. Of
Northern Ireland, Belfast. So these guys were coming over and, we came from an Irish, a mixing pot neighborhood.
Right.
But basically most of us were Irish, American, Italian or whatever. And the guys were writing Bobby Loves Mary, 65.
Right.
So now it's there. It's on the rocks in the park.
Sure.
It's on hallways. So graffiti was there. The element was there in the 40s, 50s, 60s. So we're the ones that came out with it. Tacky 183, he started writing it in the spring. Steve and I in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
I got white shoe polish. Lived on the fifth floor, walked up, opened up the sink. Mom's had the white shoe polish for our kid's sneaker, USPA flyers and all that shit that we had, And we doing that. So we wrote our names. It's in the Wall Riders book where it shows Steve's father had a photo studio. So he had a Polaroid. We went down days later, took a picture of it, and it's there. So Steve was the first one to document.
Nice.
SJK171 and Mike171. Names written down with the white shoe polish dripping. So that's the beginning of our story.
Yeah, that's wild. Are those photos still around? Those Polaroids still around?
Yeah, we got them in the book. I just mailed out a book. I'll show you later on, but We made sure that Roger Gassum, with his research and everything, putting I claim it's the Bible right now of the graffiti movement. The movie he made, everything in the book, word for word, is in the movie, in the film, Wall Riders, and that's the Holy Grail. So the Bible is the book is the Bible, and the movie is the Holy Grail for us. So right now we want to, just like a Bible, the Bible is. The Greek words, they said, the book of books. So it's all about stories in the book of the Bible. And that's what we're doing now, creating more stuff. We're working with Roger Gassum right now as we speak. He had Chris Pape, who's a historian for Roger, put together all the information they could find, all the data that's up to date, and plus the photos that Steve and I had over the years. We're going to inject this all together and come up with a book, United Graffiti Artists.
That's awesome.
So, because this month, 50 years ago, we were on stage. Hugo Martinez formed UGA, United Graffiti Artists, in 1972, October, November. And then here we are. It was in March. First 2 weeks of March, we did three shows at the City Center with the Jaffe Ballet.
Oh, really?
So we're on stage. It's in the book, too. I got to show you. So 50 years this month, this week, they had three scrolls going up. They had the Jaffe Ballet dancing to Beach Boy music, and they had 350 people sitting with black ties and black gowns at the Civic Center, giving us standing ovations.
That's awesome, man.
So being 15, 16 years old, group of kids, white, black, Spanish, and we right there taking bows, yeah, getting standing ovation. You know what I mean? It was like the pinnacle of how far you can go with this.
Now, I mean, what started you wanting to write on, like, on the street? I mean, were your friends doing it? I mean, were you out there seeing it? Or, I mean, what was the whole, what sparked this?
Well, like, again, we saw a little bit of Chulio here when we were before Tryon Park. They were on the benches or whatever, little stuff like that.
Right.
My cousin Bobby and them, they were writing with paint brushes, you know. And so we figured, hey, let's put our names.
All right.
You know, so I saw Tacky and said, hey, I'm Mike. I put 171. I'm here. If you want to find me, I'm on 71st. I'm Mike.
Right.
Steve put SJK, his initials. You know, and then Jose came along, Jekstar, J-E-C. Steve and I, well, now what happened in the summer, we were riding, and then my pops died. Uh-huh. So I'm 12 years old. So I'm in the streets. Ah, man, you know, streets became my family. So Steve and I, his father left. He's the oldest of four. So we lived in the same building. He was on the third floor. I'm on the fifth floor. My brother got a job at the A&P as a stock boy. Jose's sister was working there as a cashier. So the manager, Huey Dietrich, his daughter Linda went to school with me. And so he would tell me, you know, my dad said, go to the store after school. So I went there. He says, help the lady and you pack. I'll give you a few dollars. And then if people want them to deliver, I have you deliver. And you make some money. You take some shit home to your mother, you know.
Right.
So at the end of the week, he would take a box and give us bread, pies, whatever was left over. And nice. He helped, you know, people took care. So community helped raise us.
Right.
And so Steve came along with me, and we did that basically on Saturdays and stuff. Sunday they closed. And then Jose came, and his sister said, oh, you guys are doing this? I'll get my brother to come. So here comes this guy, Spanish, dark skin, hair parted to the side with penny loafers, and shiny pennies in them, and like a real country hillbilly, bro. And said, yo, what's up with this? So he started working with us. So that next weekend, we got some money. We ran down to Lancy stuff, and we got Playboys, and we bought, you know, sharkskin pants, double knit alpacas. And we're finding, bro. We're 13, 14 years old,
fresh.
Bro, man, yo. So we're fresh, you know, and we're dancing, dances that they had, the basement dances. And at the same time, we're writing our names, bro. And the good thing is, we're from 171st St. Nick. So 168th Street, it was two blocks away, 169th Street Station, and they would do the layups there. And right in front of the A&P was the grating that if you opened it up, you go down the stairs and open the door, you're right there where the layups were.
Right.
So at night, my brother and them would put the cardboard boxes out, and we used that as a barricade to open it up. Have our paints that we stole down at Pearl Paint on Canal Street, and we started tagging there.
Now, when you started, was it just on the streets, and how long was it before it like went to the trains?
In 69.
Okay.
You know, but being the delivery boy, we were able to go through buildings and widen the perimeter within our community and our neighborhood.
Right.
So from 171st, I would go to 167, 165th, or 180th Street, you know, delivering the food, whatever they need, you know. Got the wagon, take it up. Here's a quarter, here's a dollar, you know. So we hustled that way. And that was the money we were able to survive with, you know.
Now, how quick did you see this community grow? I mean, you talk about, you know, you met a couple guys who are doing this. And in what span of time did you see all of a sudden, like,
you know, 69, 70, just,
oh, really?
Just blew up. Man.
All right.
Because now you had the younger kids, the second wave of kids, AG 170, Lee 2, Connor 1. You know, like I say, AG 170, all these kids, Leo 170. So these kids are starting to come up, you know. But for us, we were doing it with markers and stuff and shoe polish, like in 68, 69, we, you know, started using the markers and stuff. Mm-hmm. But you got to remember at that time, you had Vietnam going on. You had police corruption, police brutality. You know, the ghettos were burning, as I showed you earlier. You know what I mean? So that's the atmosphere we were living in.
Right.
You know, so Steve and I are fatherless. You know what I mean? So we in the streets. We surviving. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that carries knives and shit. And then more shit got involved after that. You know, gangs started coming around. Mm-hmm. And the gangs started really developing in 69, 70. Because now you had the Dominicans coming over in early 65 into 68. Where, like, the Massives just came into Washington Heights into the 140s, 150s, 160s. Mm-hmm. And that was, like, all Dominican down there, you know? So
now, when did you, like, when they came in, did you see they were adopting the graffiti as well?
And yes, they did. Right. Yeah. So it was Leo 163rd, Felix 163rd, Stitch 2, these other guys, you know, Pastel 161. You know, all these guys, they started getting up and we went to school with them as they, so they would tag along with us.
Right.
So they we taught them the cultures, you know, so we welcomed them with, here's a red carpet, welcome to New York, America, here's a hot dog hamburger. They said, yo, we got chicharrones and tostones, you know what I mean? So they're showing the culture. They're bringing them to a house where you got three generations of 15 people living in a 2-3-bedroom apartment that they made the dining room into a bedroom. And you got 4 bunk beds in each room, sleeping 12, 15 people, from the grandmothers, uncles, aunts that are working in factories and the kids trying to go to school. That's all wild. Came from the Dominican Republic. And they were comfortable.
Yeah.
And it was love. Yeah. His family, and they opened arms to us, making sancocho. Grandma with a big oil, like wood, throwing all types of veggies in there, you know, juca and platano and all that shit, and, you know, chicken, beef, whatever you got, man. And here's a bowl, here's some rice and bowl, and everybody's eating it. Comfort food, you know?
I think that's something that happens in New York, that's in any large city, that people who haven't seen it or haven't been a part of it don't understand that, you know, it's the survival mode that happens. And like you said, these places, they still have the love that happens. But mm-hmm. it's like, I have friends who are in your generation who are like 1 of 10 that grew up in a 2-bedroom apartment. Yeah. There's the people downstairs from me. They're in a 1-bedroom apartment. They have 4 kids. So there's 6 people in a 1-bedroom apartment and they're making it work, man. Yeah. And it's like, you know, it's one of those things that it's unfathomable to most people. But it's like, you know, if the love's there, like, it don't matter. You're gonna survive. You're gonna work for it. But it's, you know, to most people, they just can't even comprehend that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, now in these days, everybody wants silver spoon. You know, they want to be pampered and shit. I mean, we had to go out and hustle, man. So that's why I take this culture that we started. We are the innovators of the New York City graffiti culture movement. This is history. Mm-hmm. We're still here. So our story needs to be told.
Sure.
And we're the boys from the Heights. So I just, like, I haven't legally incorporated yet, but we're planning to, you know, do everything legal because we want to start branding stuff, mm-hmm. you know, merchandise and stuff, and making sure that we don't, like with Tacky, Tacky's part of us in our crew with Henry 161, Jack Starr, myself, and SJK, and my daughter's our manager. So we're getting all paperwork together because, like, over in Europe, there's a lot of counterfeit shit going down. They're selling Tacky stuff.
Oh, really?
You know? Yeah. You know, so it's hurting him and it's hurting the culture. Mm-hmm. So what I'm trying to do, that's why I'm doing a lot of traveling, is to put this shit to the stop.
Right.
You know what I mean? If we got to synthesize our stuff, you know, copyright, trademark, you know, the other guys have did that already. Like I said, I got my comp case. I'm out right now. So I'm just putting everything on hold.
Yeah.
I'm dealing with my wife right now. She got cancer.
Oh, Jay, sorry to hear that.
So I've been, like, the last 2 months, you know, taking care of her.
Sure.
You know what I mean? That's why I was a few minutes late with you, because I'm feeding her, you know, the dishes, all that stuff, washing up. So that's part of life, man. But, you know, this is the struggle of what we went through back then. And it's the same old shit. The only thing that changes is the date and the weather, bro.
Right.
You know?
Now, when you started, kind of, this community started, I mean, when did you guys form a crew? When did the crew start? I mean.
Yeah, so what happened was, you know, we writing our names. We said, we're getting our names up, man. Let's, you know, we're like the trio. And I kind of made a pact with the guys because, you know, I grew up watching a lot of TV and films. Reason why that, I went to Incarnation Grammar School up on 175th, Audubon, Amsterdam, Washington Heights. So, you know, I was an altar boy in 1962. I was in first grade, 64. I'm an altar boy. My little brother just died, little Joe. Oh, he was like 22 months. You know, he died of spinal meningitis. So my sister was younger. I was like 7, 8 years old when he died. She was a few years younger than him, or older than him. So they put her in the quarantine and gave her a spinal tap, and they took tests on me, you know, if we had spinal meningitis. It turned out to be next to the baby hospital, Columbia Presbyterian, across the street from San Juan Theater, where Audubon Ballroom, where Malcolm X was killed. There was a rock there that we used to play on, and it was called Pigeon Park, and there was pigeon shit all over the place. So, you know, we're climbing up, and this is our game shit. So the meningitis came from the pigeon shit.
Damn.
Killed my brother. My brother didn't kill him. He died from the shit. So that kind of took away from me. I lost my brother because my father, you know, took care of my brother. My mother took care of my sister, my younger brother, and I was in the middle between mom and dad, you know? So right. Being a middle child, my mind was always like, you know, out of spaceship. We grew up watching Twilight Zone, Alfred Hitchcock, you know, Gigantor, you know, cartoon shit, you know, Lost in Space and all that shit. So, you know, that fantasy shit. So my mind was like, if this was, you know, my little brother died and this was out there, fuck this. You know what I mean? So yeah. I didn't like school, nothing, but I did what I just got by, you know?
Sure.
And that's what happened. Then when dad died, you know, when I was 11, 12, I turned 12, you know, that's where like, you know, the priest and the teachers, the brothers were telling me, you know, you got to man up now. And that, you know, so now I'm not a kid anymore.
Sure, sure.
So it took away from me, bro.
Right.
You know, I'm out there hustling for food and learning how businesses and how transactions and how to deal with people.
Right.
You know, in the meantime, my escape was throwing my name up.
Right. Yeah. No, yeah. I agree with that. And also something I've found in this community, at least in my generation in this community, I mean, it's changed so much from, you know, you guys writing on the walls, the 80s graffiti that popped up, which I was influenced by, 90s graffiti changed. And I mean, it, you know, just keeps evolving street art now, all sorts of different things happening. But the thing is that the constant is the community. And now that it's a worldwide thing, you're going traveling, and I travel a bunch and do this, and there's so many like-minded people, and this community has been so welcoming, which I've found. I mean, I know it's different when you're younger, you're dealing with, like, I'm sure there's, with the crews, I'm sure there was a point where it became territorial, and especially when, you know, gangs get involved in other stuff, and people, you know, there's always beef that happens, but for the most part, I find it to be a very welcoming movement and a welcoming community, and I think that's a big part of it, because you do meet people that become your family. You do meet people that, you know, these relationships last. I mean, you're talking about relationships with guys that you've had for since
55 years.
That's
right,
wild,
now.
Man.
Me, Steve, and Jose are together 55 years as JMS 171. This is the first crew that threw our names up on the train. Roger Gasson found a photo and put it in the book and said, "Yo, guys, look what I got."
That's wild.
That was one of our first tags, JMS on our 46, the silver with the blue thing right on the blue stripe, JMS 171. It's right in the book of Wall Riders. I'm like, damn, look at that, you know? So that's what we did. We write JMS, Jose being the oldest, I'm the next, and then Steve. You know, Jose was born in 55, I'm born in 56, Steve born in 57.
It's wild, man. Now, with this starting, I mean, people think about either Washington Heights or graffiti started in the Bronx, like this whole area. Now,
that's not a question. The facts are Washington Heights. The facts are, all right? Before the Bronx, anybody came out, Boogie Bronx, all that good stuff. Right now, the all hype and all the spotlight is on hip-hop 50 years,
sure.
All right? 55 years ago, we started graffiti movement. And what they say the four elements of graffiti, of hip-hop are.
Right, I mean.
You know, so they're saying graffiti is the first element.
Sure.
And all that. But, you know, we're feeling graffiti isn't an element of hip hop.
Mm.
You know, this is our own culture that we started.
Right.
It's the culture that we started, you know, because we were rapping anyway. I'm saying I'm White Mike on the motorbike eating Chicken Delight with every bite. I'm the uptown moneymaker, downtown heartbreaker from the city with no pity. So nice I had to name it twice, New York, New York. And if you mess with me, you will see how much trouble I can be with my 38-45. But that's my spray cans. That's how I express myself to stay alive. You know what I'm saying? So
love it, man.
You know, we throw them down like that.
Yeah, no doubt.
So, you know, and we grew up in. And our neighborhood was Acapello and all that shit. Across the street was Speedo, you know, Mr. Earl. He was saying Charlie Brown, the name of my dog. You know what I mean? So we grew up with him. We grew up with Frankie Lyman and the teenagers. Down the block was Herman and Jimmy. They were the backup singers for Frankie. So the doo-wop culture was there in the late 50s, early 60s.
Right.
And we had like four generations on our block. We saw the guys going to Vietnam in 65, 67.
Right.
You know, coming back junkied up. You know what I mean? Some guys didn't make it home.
No, for sure.
Like a guy, Billy Grayley, bro. You know, his father came to me. You know, my son died. Here's his baseball gear. You know what I mean?
Jesus.
Come on, man. You know what I mean? This is the, how the community was.
Right, right.
You know, he's burying his son, but they're giving me his his artifacts, bro. Sure.
Yeah, it's
Steve,
heavy.
Shit, hit me hard because you bring me back memories, brother. And it was such a unity, bro. No color barrier, nothing.
Right.
My mother didn't have a husband. She had an open door, and we had kids in the house all the time, bro. She didn't want us to get in trouble. You guys come up here. You want us, you know, smoke your weed or drink your little stuff. You come up to the house.
Right.
And we had the door that everybody signed in.
Oh, that's awesome, man.
And, the lady, after I moved out, she still lives there. I'm trying to get that door, even though it's been painted
right,
over.
I'm sure,
but, I mean, there's the technology. We could strip the shit out. You got everybody that tagged that, bro. That's $1 million door right there, bro.
That's wild, man. So how long did it take from it to go from the Heights to starting to see it in other other boroughs?
Well, we started seeing it because we lived uptown. Like, last stop is 207th Street. So from 168, it's like four more stops. Dyckman Street, they got layups.
Yeah.
And then it breaks off to the right, the tracks that goes down into the train yard. So we started hitting the ghost yard up at 207th Street. Or for 10th Avenue. That's where they park all the trains at night. And that's when we started hitting them. But these trains were the number one and the A trains, the Broadway lines, that they would break the IRT into the 2, 4, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. Mm-hmm. And they, those cars started going to the Bronx. So later on, we were told by Phase 2, Lee 163rd, and other members that, you know, when they came into United Graffiti Artists in 72 with us, 72, 73, they said, you know, we saw your guys' name on the trains first. Mm. And that's what inspired them in 69 and 70.
That's awesome.
When they started. So hearing that from these legends back then, you know, we were the first. Right. You know, that's Washington Heights is the mecca of the universal graffiti movement.
I mean, I think that's another awesome thing about this community and about this movement is when you're putting things out on the street, you never know who's going to see it. You never know who you're going to influence. And you're just out there living your life. You're out there having fun. You're out to do, having this community, having these times with your brothers. It's like one of these things that it's incredible when you meet someone who you look up to and they're like, oh, I love your stuff, man. You know, it's like, what? I mean, it's, and also because, you know where you came from, but also these people took it, carried it on. And
exactly. We passed the torch to the younger generations, bro. You know, and that's why right now we feel we're like the eldermen, you know, that we're in charge of this, you know? So I don't want to see anything falsified, such as timelines, that people do make their own shit and say their own shit. Well, I looked in the research, I said, man, we lived it, we walked it, we sweated, we put our blood, sweat, and tear into this.
Man, no doubt.
You know, so this is our culture. So we have a right to dictate and put down what's, you know, what's right, what's the truth.
Right.
And all we want is teach people what the truth is. And before, you know, before I die and leave this earth, I want to maintain and make sure that all our history is documented properly.
Now, this is a question about kind of old New York. I mean, like, my dad's from New York. He's older than you. And it's like, I remember when he was growing up here, the boroughs had more of a separation. People might stay in their neighborhood. They really don't even go downtown.
They never left the neighborhood.
Right. So when that's happening, but these trains are moving and people are getting inspired seeing your stuff. Now you think about every other city, like Philly has its own style. You go even overseas, like, you know, all these cities have their own style where there are pockets in New York that were seeing your stuff and then they were kind of creating their own style from it.
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly what happened because these are rolling galleries.
Right.
You know? There were sleeping whales that we called them up in the ghost yard. And we called it the ghost yard because there were like 30 tracks, all the trains laid up there. And there used to be a night watchman. So after we would like hug the 30-foot wall where the tower was to get by the guys, because you would see the guys walking back and forth in the tower. So we're hugging the wall all the way like, you know, Attica type shit that you're escaping. But we're trying to get in. Yeah. So we go all the way down by the East River and boom, you know. We go along the rocks, under the fence. There was no backpacks. There was no shop. We had shopping bags or we had, you know, crates with the LC the cow, milk crates, you know what I mean? And we carry notes with spray cans and we could stand on the box and shit, you know, get past the third rail. So at night, you would see, you know, trains turning on. They're shutting them off. They're leaving the keys there. You know, we know how to lift the seat and pull the level and the doors open up, you know. We found some keys and got the maid, you know, Stitch made some stuff. We had the keys to open up the lock on the gate, on the exit doors. We had keys to start the train. It was crazy, man, you know. So now night watchmen be coming, and you see the lanterns. They be swinging the lanterns, so you see the shadow going like a ghost, you know. And that's why we call it the ghost yards, because we were rolled three or four. I know you guys are there. You had the cans and smelling the paint. You guys are, we're rolling underneath. And the cans are rattling, and all you see is feet and the shadows going. And
that's,
you take a break, or we hide somewhere until he calms down. You know, they weren't calling cops and shit. Later on, they brought dogs and all that other shit, but... Yo, it was goof. So this was the birth of a movement.
Right.
You know, this is the meat and potatoes. This is the marrow that's inside the bones, bro, that we spitting out today, all this information. And this is what, you know, get guys like T-Kid 170 and guys that burnt up and blew up the Ghost Yards, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That got them the fame and shit. That they're hearing our stories and they're loving it because there's a beginning to everything.
Right.
Just like with the Bible and Moses and... Greeks and everybody and all the other history that we got with mankind, you know, they got their story.
Right.
We got my story, your story, and his story, which is the truth. So that's what we're doing. We just want to lay down, leave something behind for others could, you know, like we made a path so others could follow. So we want to leave the history behind for people to acknowledge it.
Yeah, I mean, how do you feel after all these years to see what you guys started and what it's turned into?
It's fucking amazing, right? You know? But again, it's like, we haven't seen a dollar bill. Everyone else is, you know, Roger got the top 100 people over there in London, which is good, you know. You know, more power to them. There ain't no jealousy here. We know, I know who I am, and I'm never going to be hungry. I'm keeping the roof over my head, shirt on my back, and food on the table, and that's all I could do.
Right.
You know, I'm taking care of my needs, not my wants. Everybody wants. They want to be the first. They want to be the best. They want to get paid. Look at me. I'm in the spotlight. But, yo, you got to earn the shit.
Sure.
You know, and we feel this is our time.
Right.
So I want to tell everybody, step the fuck aside and let the boys from the Heights come and shine now.
Nice.
So I'm challenging the world. Anyone got any shit? This ain't no beef. It's just the history, bro.
Right.
You know, ain't no punk Willy bubblegum chewing up gum, spitting you out type shit. This the real deal shit.
Well, timeline's a timeline.
You know, and you know, at this point in our life, you know, like my brother, he's going to turn 70. He got a heart transplant. That's Space Cowboy Billy, you know. So that's my brother. That's my idol. He was always into art. He wrote his name a little bit. You know, he did his shit. So I just got a deal with a guy from France that they made like a statue type of a guy holding his heart with a zoot suit and the chain hooked up. So they want to name that after my brother, Space Cowboy Billy. They want to bring us to Paris this summer.
And
they made 12 pieces. The guys have 50 galleries that they represent all through Europe. They wanted to bring my art there and acknowledge my honor to my brother with this.
Damn, congrats, and I just
kicked it with him the other day. This is a few days ago up on the roof.
Yeah.
The guy said, I got an office in Manhattan. No, you come to my office on Rooftop Cafeteria.
Yeah, right.
And you see my kingdom.
Yeah.
Which I'm showing you now.
Yeah.
So this ain't no talking shit. I zip in my mouth, throw the key away. Just watch my actions.
Yeah.
And that's what we're going to do. Today's the first day of spring, 2023. This is where it starts right now.
Now, I mean, you talk about going into the yards. Obviously, you know, the guards there are pissed because you guys are breaking in there. They can smell it. They can hear it and all that shit. But what time, like, how long into this did the cops start paying attention to what was happening?
They threw a one-man team out there. So this is no graffiti book, two wall riders. There was one guy, Schwartz. He went after, he was a graffiti guy.
Then just one dude?
Yeah, it was then a partner. Then they got a partner. Then there was like a vandal squad they came up with. And by that time, we already, you know, we went from the streets to the train yards, back alleys, you know, to where Hugo Martinez found us in 72. So you're talking from 68 to 72. That was our time in the service. You know what I mean? We did our service time then. Now they take us off the streets and they put us in a workshop on 169th Street and Jamel Avenue. And that's funny because that's originally across the street where Steve and I put our first tags with the shoe polish.
Yeah, nice.
So it's funny how time
just
goes in a circle, you know, and swings back around that we did from there into there, off the walls onto canvas. We learned how to make our own canvases and shit, you know. And then him taking it from there to the first ones to do the Razor Gallery in 73, right after we did the show of the Civic Center with Joffrey Ballet in March. So like this year, 50 years, all this shit is coming up. It's 50 years that the first graffiti was put in September of 73 into a gallery. August 11, 73, Cool Herc playing music, you know? So when we get up afterwards on the wall over there, I got a collage of photos from my boy Lee too, his aunt Brenda, who lived in 1520 Cedric. So she got photos in there of when Cool Herc set up outside in the yard. You know, that's awesome. That's the birth of hip hop.
Right.
So we're already into the graffiti thing.
Sure.
Almost 5 years.
Right.
You know what I mean? So like, we're already on Broadway stage.
Right.
We're already in the magazine, the New York magazine, 8-page spread that states, how did Jack Starr and Mike 171 manage to write their names on jet planes in Puerto Rico? That was in 72 when Jose's family moved back to Puerto Rico. And he stayed with my family. He lived with us. You know, so they said, come and visit us. So we went to Ponce in Puerto Rico, and we started tagging up the plane, you know, because they didn't have the terminals then. That plane would land on the tarmac. And we told, so the pilots were the last ones off. So, I forgot a bag up there. He said, all right, go ahead, kids. Go get it and come right back quick. So, yes, sir. We went in there. We pulled down every tray, every window shade, the bathroom, and we tagged the whole inside of the plane. And we came out. That was that. We didn't have no camera. There was no shit, but we did it.
Right, right.
And we told people, and they put in, I told Richard Goldstein of the New York Magazine, and he put that in the magazine in my, you know, interview that he put. He also put, says Mike 171, it's going to take more than cops to stop this movement. There's kids all over the city. There's thousands of kids all over the city with shopping bags full of paint just waiting to tag their names. That was a revolutionary statement.
Yeah, man.
You know, man, 15 years old, we're saying, we started this in 68. Look how far we got. You can't stop this shit.
Sure.
You know, because we're already going legit now.
Yeah.
You know, we're on Broadway stage. We're getting standing ovations.
Yeah, I mean, that's crazy to me because, you know, being doing this in the city for 14 years now, I mean, I know it might not sound like shit compared to your time here doing this, but at the same time, I haven't really seen the art scene, the public, the, you know, magazines, the papers paying attention to what's going on in recent years to the point where compared to what you were talking about in these early years, maybe because it was so new, it was so fresh, it was so something like it was different.
Yeah, it was vandalism they were writing that. That's all it was. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, and Mayor Lindsay was the one that brought out, oh, this is graffiti, war against graffiti. We were tagging our names.
Right.
We weren't labeled. That was a label that was put on us.
Right.
You know, and the graffiti coming from the Greek word to write, you know, whatever, you know, it was a scratch. So that's where it's at, you know? So we live the whole thing so far, you know? We're living the whole culture right now. And our thing is, you know, we just want to go out here in public and be recognized. And again, like, you know, here Steve and I, we did a piece for Strutt Museum in Amsterdam.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we got some galleries lined up in Paris. You know, we're talking to people out in Berlin, Tokyo, everywhere, you know, that want to bring us and start, you know, recognize us.
That's awesome.
And so right now, like, this is the headquarters. Right. So our universal headquarters of New York City Graffiti for the Boys from the Heights, for United Graffiti Artists, for the ex-Vandals. This is our crews. This is the people that I'm involved with, that we want to take this and just, like, the Knights of the Round Table, bring all the truth out, put it there, and then go out and serve the public and teach, preach, and hand it down to next generations. Like, as you see right where you're at, my 4-year-old granddaughter,
right.
You know,
yeah,
showed them the graffiti. You know, all this is hers. Whatever I got here, this is theirs.
That's awesome.
Yeah, man. You know?
Now, when, a couple different things before we start recording, you mentioned you were in the service. Is this something like when you were serving, were you, I think of someone like Big Daddy Roth, who was out there like tagging and drawing on stuff while he was in the service. Were you continuing this, or like at what age did you kind of feel you done your part and did you step away from it, or were you just always doing this?
Well, again, you know, in 74, 73, Jose and I, we went to join the Marine Corps. The gangs were getting heavy. A couple of homicides on our block. I was pulled in, interior witness, because I was there, but I didn't see nothing. So I had to run to Canada for 4.5 months. I was going to Bishop Dugois Catholic High School on 152nd in Amsterdam. I lived on 171st in Audubon, so I could walk to school, whatever. And, you know, I had to skip the country. So I went over there, came back, school wouldn't let me back in. They said, we don't allow murderers in here and all this shit. I said, all right, fine. So I go to George Washington High School. As I'm walking up to the school, see undercovers going slow by me. And the guy said, oh, so I said, welcome back. You know, you came back from Canada. And he's shaking a box of bullets. He said, look, I got your name on this.
Jeez, dude.
So, you know what I mean? So, so not only that, I got the gang shit that people are getting killed, but you got cops that, like, watching me like a hawk.
Right.
You know, knowing who I am, Mike 171 and all that shit, you know. And I'm saying, oh, this is how this shit is, you know. So, so Stitch 1 took my birth certificate. We went to the Marine Corps place to sign up. The recruiting station, 181st, and the guy says, all right, you got to bring your birth certificate. I said, yeah, we're both 17. You know, he's living with me. My mom's ready to sign me in, blah, blah, blah. So we changed my birth certificate from 56 to 55. Stitch 1 took like a bobby pin, mm-hmm. and he scratched it out 6 to a 5. So photocopied that. He did it with the white pen, touched it up, looked brand new shit. Go to sign, I get the paperwork. Me and Jose go down to Fort Hamilton and get sworn in. Not sworn in yet, but get the medicals, get on the bus to get to the airport. And they yank me by my collar and say, yo, come here, boof. Two Marine guys, MPs, they take me in. Talk to the guy in charge and says, look, you're only 16. We got your school record. You got this and that. You can't go. I said, look, my pops was a Marine in World War II in Japan, blah, blah, blah. You know, Vietnam's on. I gave him the whole spiel. You know, America, I want to fight. You know, it's in my country. You got to wait till you're 17. All right. So Jose said, what am I good? I said, you go ahead, brother. So he went to boot camp, 73. So I had to stay out there a little bit longer. More shit went down. And then in 74, I was able to get out and go to Navy. My mother took me up there, signed in, and get on the ship. And I started writing my name, you know, around wherever we went. We did a six-month med cruise over in, you know, Italy, France, Spain, Turkey, Greece. You know, so my name got up, Naples, Italy, and Barcelona, Spain, and all that, you know. So it, you know, just write my name with markers and shit. So it was fun doing that. But when I came out, you know, I got addicted to heroin overseas. So, you know, the UGA just closed up when I got back. I got discharged early. I had an incident where they tried to throw me off the ship. I was on watch with these headphones and binoculars, and three guys came up behind me with a blanket. They tried to throw me overboard.
Holy shit.
Yeah. So I'm on off the fantail, starboard side, and they got like four or five wires. I wrapped myself around, had the blanket over me, and I was taking up martial arts and being from the street. I'm fighting for my life.
Sure, bro. Of course. Literally.
And these are country redneck motherfuckers, bro, that, you know, they wanted me out. I mean, they had KKK meetings on the ship hoods. The Sons of the South. You know what I mean? So this is the ship we live with, 5,500 people on the ship, 4,000 country redneck people from down south, and the rest was a minority of black, white, Spanish, Filipinas, and people from New York. And me being who I am, white Mike on a motorbike, you know, they sorted me out. They didn't like me. So a lot of shit went down. So then that incident happened. Then we were getting bladder acid at that time. 74. So we're getting sheets of them. There's a lieutenant who was in the photo unit, and he was getting helicopters coming in now real quick. He had the sheets, and they started with selling them $5 a tab. So you're out of sea for 30, 45 days, 15 days, whatever. You're taking shit. Guys were tripping. So what happened? They put that shit in the coffee of the pilots.
Jeez.
Planes go to take off. They're starting to trip. Guys are going up there hallucinating. So they had to shut down the thing, sent chasers up to come get them down. 60, 70 guys, they were all fucked up, you know, going to sick bay and this and that. And when the investigation, all the fingers came to white Mike from New York. So now you got these Marine guys coming with guns and shit, marching, yeah, stepping down the hallway, boom, get me out of my bunk. The bastard arms is searching my whole place. Then they say, oh, we got some paper here. I'm thinking it's bladder acid.
Right.
I had nothing, you know, so. They charged me with conspiracy against the government, mutiny on the ship, espionage. All these are facing four charges, facing 5 to 20 years in state penitentiary, federal penitentiary in Leavenworth. So I'm 18 years old, and I'm saying, what the fuck happened? You know, I mean, this is what my government's doing to me.
Jesus, dude.
You know, coming out of the streets, all this shit that's happened to me, you know, death in my families, and all this other shit. I left out something, man. It's in the movie, but I'll talk about it another time, man. But, yeah, I'll talk about You got time?
Yeah.
So going back after my pops died, my mom's wanted to change the apartment, get some furniture, because my daughter, my sister would move in, I mean, would sleep in her bedroom and shit. So they get new furniture right up daddy around Christmas. And my mother asked one of us to stay home from school. My brother said he had a test that day. So I said, I'll stay home. So somebody knocked on the door. Nobody was there. I had the chain on the door. Guy knocks on the door again. I open it. He breaks the door open. Got a gun, pistol with me. Takes me through the hallway down into my mother's bedroom. Puts me in there and ransacks the house looking for money and open up Christmas gifts. So I'm wishing. I'm in the closet. Oh, shit. All scared. Think I'm going to die. You know, my mother's high heels, the fox heads from the furs and shit. I got nothing to defend myself. He put me in the other closet. I got a bow and arrow set, a hunting knife for my brother.
All right.
So he comes out. Yo, where's the money? Ain't no money. He's the envelope, mother. Check. I said, yo, get undressed for you don't follow me. I said, yo, get undressed. And he just took me, threw me on the bed, greased up, and he raped me.
Jesus,
dude. You know what I mean? So he had a knife to me, the gun to my head. I blacked out, bro. I felt an out-of-spirit, out-of-body experience. I felt like a little kid. I was a little kid up in the top of the ceiling looking down at my body. When I came back into myself, he was gone. You know what I mean? So I was broken. I was spiritually broken. My knees were up by my chest. I'm shaking. I come to. He ain't in the house. I washed myself up. My mother was working up at a grocery store in Dykeman as she was partners with this other lady. Francis was a nurse across the street. My mother called her. She got me, took me to the hospital. They douched me out, cleaned me out. New York City detectives come, and they start asking me. These are fat, redneck faces with cigarettes and red cheeks from drinking all the time. And they're saying, you know, do you like boys? You like men touching you and shit? And I was like, what the fuck? You know, I don't know nothing about homosexuality or rapes. And I know I've been fucking, you know, my ass been broken, and I'm fucked up here. So fuck you, cops, bro, you know? And I just, like, lunged out. So at that point in the hospital, once the doctors were white gloving me and fixed me up and showing me compassion and everything, sure. And the cops are saying, like, fuck you.
Right.
You know, I said, yo, man, I put a brick wall around me and I put a steel encasing around me, man, because I didn't want nobody to know how I fucking felt, bro.
Sure.
You know what I mean? This shit happened to me. That's what I lived like, you know, so I became like a gangster shit, bro. You know, I carry guns. They call me Trigger. I was always, like I said, my rap, 38 and 45s. I would pop a cap in your ass, shoot you in your kneecap. You know, this was no fucking game, bro. This is life and death shit, bro. Because I didn't give a fuck about living anymore.
Fuck,
you know, man. I'm only 12, 13 years old, bro. Shit ain't right, you know? So I had to live with this all my fucking life, and I'm still dealing with that shit today. But yeah. I'm happily married. I got kids. I got grandchildren. You know, so I'm good. I'm good. But that shit's always there up front. I can't forget where I came from, what happened to me, or who I am. That's why I am so, you know, down to death with this graffiti movement. That I ain't going to let nobody dictate this shit, throw shows, make timelines, let motherfuckers make money, think of who the fuck they are, and they could just crawl over us and forget about us because this shit ain't happening.
Well, I mean...
You know, that's what I'm saying.
First, this is...
No, this is heavy shit I'm going to talk about.
Yeah,
you know, I'm
yeah,
throwing
no,
it out because I ain't got nothing to hide, bro.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
I mean, there's nothing wrong
it's
with that.
It's a podcast. We're talking truth here, so...
Well, I mean, this is the shortest commute I've ever had to have for a podcast, coming like two blocks over. Yeah. And the thing is, every day I walk my dog, I've gone by this building. And to see all the things that you've done, to see, I didn't know this was your building. It wasn't until I talked to Jake Kennedy, who was telling me, hey, come check this out. And you're talking about community, you're talking about these people that helped you and what you've created here, you were showing me before. And this, like, the fact that you're want to have your story told and you want to make sure it's told right, but you're also, you're continuing this community. You have this space, you're showing me this, I mean, you got this amazing rooftop where you have people painting, you're like creating, you know, gallery spaces in here, you're bringing people in here, you're traveling over to do this. But like, I mean, obviously the movement, the people you've worked with and kind of what, who you've inspired, what this has turned into, the fact that you're still part of this and still continuing it and being a pillar of it is huge, man. And like I said, to walk by, I've walked down this block for years and to say like, fuck, what is this? What is this? This is awesome. I mean, it's a part of the community. It's part of the community I live in.
Yeah.
And that's important, man, because art's important. So, I mean, what you guys have done is important. I do what I mean, I didn't really know about the early years about you guys. Like I said, I was more influenced by the work of the 80s. But the thing is that if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't be here talking to you. Yeah. And that's pretty fucking crazy.
And just on that note, like you're saying, LL Cool J told me and Steve at the Beyond the Streets in Brooklyn, in front of Roger Gasson, that said, yo, when I was 10 years old, I'm holding my grandmother's hand on this train, on the platform, and watching the train go by with you guys' names on it. He said, that shit inspired me, bro. So Steve and I had a map. We wrote our names, and we presented that to LL. So when he told us that, he said, Mike, if you guys got any major projects, put me down, because what I got today is because of what you guys inspired me.
That's huge, man.
So that's from LL Cool J. We down in Miami, Art Basel, 17, and Mr. June, the guy that showed you inside, yeah, right? He's supposed to do a wall. 50 Cent was doing a thing for DJs with his vodka and whatnot. And so he didn't show up, Mr. June. So they had a meeting of 12 people. I burst in the room with Steve, Jose. We just got off the plane, me and Steve, from New York to Florida. Met Jose, got Swift, who's from the Black Boys Love, BBL, down there. They're out of Connecticut, that they're down in Florida. And we took Swift with us, and we went into this meeting just saying, yo, who's in charge here? You know, this is the RC Cola plant there. And the girl, Steffi, was there, says, yeah, I'm in charge of here. I said, listen, I'm Mike 171. This is my Wall Riders book. We're the guys that started the New York City shit culture, you know? You got a wall for us? And their meeting, they said, well, we're having a discussion. Can we talk later? And they said, I said, no, we got to know now. She said, okay, look. She broke the meeting up, took us outside, showed us a wall. You guys could do this. So right away, you start getting creative. We're doing it in New York City, 95 North, 95 South, New York City background with a train coming out, and then Miami Beach with the palm trees and the metro train and whatnot coming this way. Lady Liberty in the middle with gazelle glasses, Adidas sneakers. You know what I mean? So this is what we did. So we did this wall for 50. Now, 50 comes a few nights later, and they got 50 paparazzis, Rolling Stone, all that shit. And so I go over to 50. I said, my man, we want to present you a book, but let's do it in front of our mural. So they all follow us. I'm giving the book. I'm signing the book to them. And they start, Rolling Stone took a picture. So I got Steve on one side, Jose on the other. 50 got his big 300-pound balancing next to him. So after we took photo shoots, he goes to grab the book. I said, nah, wait, man. You got to let Steve and Jose sign it. My boys, nah, I got to go. I said, nah. I pull my book back. So the bouncers come in. I said, yo, my man, big man, step back. I said, 50. You see, what we did, we started, you got today what you got because of what we did. So he had his drink in the hand. He said, yo, true to that. So he said, go ahead, let them sign it. You know, so I had to put him, tell him the truth. Yo, right. You got your shit here. Because of what we did, bro. We laid down the fuck. We made the pass all this good follow. We laid down the foundation, bro. You know, so I'm telling that to 50 Cent. LL telling me that, you know, if you guys got major projects, we do. So I reached out to Roger, getting correspondence with LL, and we got some shit we want to do, you know. So that's where I'm at. I'm just being creative, everything. We want to do a 50th anniversary of the Jaffe Ballet. We're going to have the scrolls going up. We're going to spray paint the original people that were there. Shaman 65, Snake One, Coco 144, Wicked Gary from X Vandals, myself, Cat 87, who's a doctor. You know, we're getting all the old crew together to do that. I got dancers and performances from Paris and New York that are going to do shit. We're going to play some music of our time, and we're going to videotape it and maybe get or off-Broadway show, and I'll rent out a space for $1,500, $2,000, and just do it, and just film it, and say, this is what we're doing, just for a celebration of life for ourselves, bro.
That's awesome, man.
So you're asking, like, where I'm in today? I'm putting all my nuts and bolts together, shaking this up, and make some kind of thing out of this, bro.
Well, one thing I like about, you know, like I said, much in walking past this place every day with my dog is that, you know, it's like I see your guys' tags out front. I see the stuff on the roof. And then I see, like, the other day, I was like, oh, that question mark official's new. So it's nice that, like, you're including people from, you got, you know, we're talking about Mr. June. You got people from Europe that have painted here. You got people, like, kind of new school people that are painting here. You got old school cats that are painting here. So I think the generational, like filling that generational gap to have it be really a united community is pretty awesome. So I just want to say, like, I appreciate that. Like seeing, because I've just seen it from the street, but then talking to a couple people, talking to you, you showing me, it's like, wow, this is
real deal. This is historical shit we got here, bro. I mean, you know, look where I went, 75th anniversary. I went to carry a 30 by 60 American flag with my man, Mitch Mendler from San Diego police, fire and paramedic, that, knowing that I'm a 9/11 survivor, that we've been doing these events over the years, which I show you the flags when we're inside. So we took this flag over to Utah Beach and Omaha Beach, man.
Oh, wow. On
the 75th anniversary. It goes all the presidents, heads of states up on top of the hill seeing us unfold this flag, bro. You know what I mean? And I brought back sand from the beaches.
That's awesome.
You know? And we were over there with the NYPD pipe and drum, the Emerald Society, and 100 of them were there. And they're playing for the town where the paratroopers were jumping into and liberated, Paris, France. So, you know, we're doing that. And there was a school from Texas that was there, something like that, that I was able to get all these kids to come and pull the flag out while the Emerald Society played, you know, for the town and shit. You know, so, I mean, the mayor, everybody. It was just unifying everybody, you know what I mean? And that's what I do, man. I like creating stuff and having events and just celebration of life for everybody, man. You know, be happy, joyous, and free. That's what we got to do. And that's when I was just in Paris just before Christmas when I came home. We had a big dinner there, about 20 people, that all professionals, like I said, painters, dancers, the girl Floor that I showed you, the siphon Floor. That she let me stay at her house. She gathered all her friends. She got the porch out on the fire escape. Well, not the fire escape. When you go outside, forget that shit. The terrace. I'm bugging out, excuse me. And you've seen the Eiffel Tower like 8 blocks away. You know what I mean? And she's on the top floor. And we're eating and they're drinking. I don't drink, whatever, you know. And just talking to the people and being creative and kicking ideas. And like I said, I was able to recruit some of these dancers that perform out there on stages that they want to come here to New York and do this project with us.
Sure.
You know, so, you know, I'm not dreaming anymore. I'm making this shit happen.
Well, Paris is a special place, man. And a lot of what's happening with this, first off, to conclude my idea about Paris, like, they really love art. They really love street art. They love graffiti. You know, it's like you're painting in the street. The only other experience I've had similar to that is in Berlin, where it's like I'm out there painting in the street, doing something blatantly illegal. And someone's nobody just bothered, like, they're like, oh, this is cool. Nice. What are you doing? Yeah, that's nice. And you're like, what? That's I'm not just looking over my shoulder, looking at from the cops are coming. So yeah, it took me a while to understand that, but you know, to have this situation where it's being recognized, it's being honored, which is a very different thing, man, and it's a very cool thing, especially when I've said it a million times when I talk to people, this city is full of such talent. And it's sad that you're talking about Hendrix earlier. You got these posters over here that it's like Hendrix had to go overseas to get big noticed. In London to come back and for people to realize that they had this gem here this whole time. And it's similar to, you know, this things that you guys started then blowing up around the world and, you know, being honored and cherished and in Europe is something similar that happened in like with blues music and all these jazz, different types. Yeah. All these different types of art forms that were created in the US. And then as our culture grows, we shit on it.
Yeah.
We don't care about it anymore. Yeah. And then somebody else realizes, oh, you see this cool shit they're doing over there? I mean, it's such a crazy thing that happens. And unfortunately, I think that a lot of people in our society, in the U.S. society, don't really care and don't understand that the importance of it. And the importance of in this short amount of time, you think of 50 years, that's... In a lifetime, it seemed like a big thing, but it's something that's grown from its inception to this, Universal, which is just, it's fucking wild, man.
I mean, $110 million for one painting, right. Robert Scott, you know, and Andy Warhol, all these guys, you know what I mean? They're dead, and that shit's worth millions. We're alive. Honor us now, man, you know. Help support us, you know. Help our mission, what we're trying to do. You know, we're trying to go out there and educate the public about our history, about the real deal. And while we're alive, hear our stories. That's all. You know, like I said, today's a new season. This is spring. And so from this podcast, from this event that we're doing today, you know, this is what I want to build off of. You know, this is Women's Month. I'm ready to take 4 to 8 women artists and bring them up to the roof and just let them, you know, I had that before back in 2017. So I want the ladies to get out here and show their stuff. You know, like I said, I got raped. You know what I'm saying? So I had female artists reach out to me and said, Mike, this lady got a problem. Can you help her? And she's calling me 1-2 in the morning and said, yeah, go ahead. You know, because they're talking suicide or they want to go on.
Sure, sure.
Talk to me, man. Right. You ain't going to end your life over this shit. I didn't end my life.
Right.
I was the one sitting on rooftops swinging back and forth on acid. And I got Jack Starr and Steve saying, Mike, don't do it. Don't do it. I said, I ain't going nowhere. I'm just high, bro. Right. And if I fall, if I want to fly, I'll fly. But this was your ex Jose. He said, Mike, that's crazy. Man. He's always on the rooftop. And don't know if he's going to jump or not. You know? Because it's shit I had to live with. But I had to get over that shit because of my brother to the left and my brother to the right.
Right.
Holding me up and said, yo, you good, bro. We got you. You're still the same, Mike. Ain't nothing wrong with you. So that's what I'm doing to people here. Look, you don't have to be ashamed of something. You know, we had events going on that some of the girls wanted to go to or this lady wanted to go and were scared because one of the guys that did something to her is going to be there. I said, you're under my fucking wing. Anybody come to you, or I'll pop some shit, you know.
Right.
They got to deal with me, bro. So this is how I am. I'm so, you know, wrapped up in community, common unity, you know. We're just one person each, but you put two people together, you got unity, man. And this is where you grow from. This is how you get your hood. This is your community. This is where you live. Because we eat, shit, shower, sleep right here. This is our place. Cops are here, only here 8 hours a shift. Right. You know, so they're not here all the time and know what we're going through. So we got to protect our own and take care of our own.
Right.
This is how we did back then. You know, we made sure everybody ate. If your family, someone else's family died, we made sure there was food. My mother said, yo, go get Joe and get him off the street. Come upstairs and eat with us. You know? So this is how it is done, bro. It's from the heart. Art's from the heart, bro. And it's how we live. And they say hip-hop is the experience of every part of the everyday thing that, you know, the struggle that our people go through. Our people are our people. This is who we are. There's no color barrier, bro. We're colorblind. You know, when we were in the yards and in the tunnels, there was no black or white shit. The only thing was red, green, blue and yellow, and you see a black hand handing me a blue can, and I'm white hand coming over giving him a red can. You know what I'm saying? And that's it. You know, oh, you're black. Oh, you're white. Oh, you're what you, no, it's what you write, man.
Right.
You know? So that's how it was, man. You can talk to anybody out there in my time that's still around. That's how it was, and that's how it still is with us.
And well, so all it should be, man. It's a mutual respect. It's mutual love. I mean, yeah, that's really, and it, like you said, it's all about this community. And I mean, I want to thank you for letting me in here. I want to thank you for what you've done and what you were part of starting, man. Because again, if it wasn't, the more I learn about the history of the community that I'm a part of,
right,
I learn more about like the different players in it. And like you said, it's important to talk to folks like you because it's crazy that it's an art form that started where you can still talk to the people that were part of the inception of it.
Right.
That's fucking wild, man.
Innovators. We're the innovators of this graffiti culture, so.
I appreciate you sharing your story. I wish nothing but the best for you on your journey with this, man. I'm glad you guys are getting some love and finally getting some recognition for this shit. And I just look forward to seeing what you're doing. And, you know, just coming and checking out what you're doing here, man. Because like I said, it's a part of the community I'm a part of. I wander through it by this every day. It inspires me, man. Yeah. So
it was meant to be. You know, you text me, I called you, we set up this day, and here we are. So
awesome, man.
We're good.
I appreciate it, man.
All right.
Thanks.
Take it. Nice.
This week we're brought to you by olives. You know, that wonderful fruit that you can put on pizzas and eat just as is. You can squeeze it and you can use the oil for cooking or for dipping bread in. I mean, it's really amazingly diverse. But the thing is, I don't know if you know this, but they're not really edible off the tree. So this is a confusing thing. Years ago, I was in Italy. I was walking through a town, saw an olive tree, and ate an olive, and it was the most disgusting thing I've ever tasted in my life. That's how it felt. Astringent. Felt like it sucked every bit of moisture out of my mouth. So it made me think, who actually thought of this to be edible and how to actually make this work? Was someone walking through the woods of Syria hundreds of years ago, if not thousands of years ago, and stepped on an olive and decided that they were going to see what the oil that was spilling out of this fruit tasted like? I'm not sure, but I just want to take a moment and thank those people and the ingenuity they had, however it may have come about, because without it, I don't know what I'd be cooking with oil-wise. My pizzas wouldn't be as interesting. I would have nothing to dip bread into. So, thank you on the behalf of people of the world.